You're listening to Source Daily. Join us Monday through Friday to stay up to date on what's happening in North Central Ohio. We'll be sharing a closer look at one of our top stories, along with other news, local history, memorials, answers to your questions, and more. To celebrate our 10-year anniversary, we're taking a look back at some of the biggest stories and our favorite memories. Today, we're going back in time to last year, 2022. Before we continue, we'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at RFME Insurance. RFME is committed to protecting you and your family through some of life's most precious and difficult moments. Whether you're looking for home, health, auto, or life insurance, RFME is here to help. Call 419-524-8411 to learn more. Now our feature story. Richland Source is grateful to be celebrating 10 years of local reporting across North Central Ohio. While other newspapers in Ohio and across the nation have closed their doors during this time, we've embraced the digital era without compromising on quality journalism. If having a trusted, independent news source in your community is important to you, please visit richlandsource.com/members to become a member and support our work. Now, let's head back to last year, 2022.
All right, welcome everyone. My name is Grant Ritchie. I'm a reporter with Report for America, which is a national-based corps that helps reporters across the nation. And I am with Knox Pages in Knox County, and I am here with Katie. And you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Katie Foster, and I am a digital marketing specialist for Source Brand Solutions. I started here in full time a couple of months ago. Grant, you haven't been here too long either, have you?
No, I started just about a year ago. I started June 1st last year, and my 1 year work anniversary will be coming up soon.
Nice. So, yeah, neither of us have been here too very long. So in this episode, we are going to be reviewing the year 2022. We're going to recap some local news from that year, talk about what was going on in the world, maybe even talk about a little bit what was going on in our personal world. So let's get started.
I don't know if we want to go in chronological order. One of the first things that happened was the start of the Russian-Ukrainian war, and that began February 21st, 2022. That's when Russia invaded Ukraine, and I remember you gotta go back to the end of 2021, and really January, when people were wondering if it was going to happen, if it wasn't, and it was kind of a surreal moment when it did happen. I remember that was back when I worked at the Ashland Times-Gazette when I lived in Ashland, Ohio, and we were writing a lot of stories about people who knew Ukrainians or were from Ukraine some shape or form, and ways that the community members were trying to support Ukraine in the war. But yeah, that was pretty serious, and it's still ongoing at this time, and it's just a tragic situation.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I think that was honestly the first war where I was old enough to kind of understand what was going on, old enough to understand the impact that it was having on our world. And it was definitely hard. I go to the Ashland Farmers Market every Saturday when it's open in the summer, and my little plant lady, she's from Ukraine. She had a lot of family there, so it was definitely just really sad and almost, you know, and not a great way, just interesting to learn about other people's stories and what they were going through when everything seems so fine not so far away.
Yeah, I did an interview with, I forget her name, but she worked with the city, and her husband was a professor at Ashland University. Beforehand, he was in Ukraine working there in a collegiate way or based on education. And they still had friends there, former classmates and students that still lived in Ukraine. And I mean, there was a time during that where you didn't know if they were still alive or not, because I mean, communication was just so sparse, and trying to get them out of Ukraine and find housing and hosting. And it was a very surreal and scary time, I imagine, for those folks talking with them.
For sure. Well, on a lighter note, though, something that was pretty exciting in 2022 is that COVID regulations definitely started to ease up, and life definitely felt almost normal, at least towards the end there, than what it had in quite some time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, people were allowed to... Basically, masks were kind of... I mean, people were still wearing them, obviously, but they weren't required in a lot of spaces. Schools were putting them away, allowing kids to not wear them, and faculty, and be able to travel on planes again more freely and things like that with less restrictions. So, yeah, it was, I would say it was the first year, especially going into the summer and the fall, kind of back to a sense of normalcy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm like not one to want to go out often, but I feel like especially now I do more than what I ever used to just because I can. And that was taken away from us for so long. So it's just so exciting to see people get back out together, whether that's at a restaurant, at an event, at a bar, or whatever. It's just so fun to see people actually being able to get out and talk to each other and mingle and be happy, because that was something we couldn't do for a while.
And then something that I'd say is more prevalent this year, but actually launched last year, was OpenAI's ChatGPT, which is basically, it launched on November 30th. It's able to give answers. You give it a prompt, you go on ChatGPT's website, and you can tell it to write a bunch of things in the style, or give me this answer for that, and it'll give you a detailed list of information. And we've been using it in the newsroom to some extent to help us write our stories, and just thinking of ways that we can use it in our daily operations. So it's definitely been cool.
I'm not going to lie, though. I didn't really like it at first. I think part of it was just coming out of college and stuff. It almost made me feel like I was plagiarizing and that I was stealing somebody else's words, and I hated it. But it is also so amazing to me to know that if I'm writing a 700 to 800 word story that will probably take me 2 to 3 hours to do, it does it in not even like probably like a minute and a half, and it's written. I mean definitely has its quirks and still needs help, but it's definitely a cool little gadget. And we even have you looked at the stuff that it can do, like on Canva?
No, is that like the image based stuff it can do?
Yeah, it's just like you give it a prompt just like how you do regularly, and then it just like creates this picture.
Okay.
And it's so cool. And really, I mean, I think it's definitely going to be helpful in the newsroom. I'm sure you could speak on that.
Yeah, I use it mostly for headlines. And so I will write the body of the story, and then I will copy that and paste it into ChatGPT. And then I'll say, write 3 headlines based on this body of text. And usually they're pretty lengthy headlines. But I've used some of the headlines before, and if I don't like it, then I'll kind of pick and pull some things that I like out of what ChatGPT gave me, and then I'll create my own headline. But yeah, I mean, that's mostly the way I use it.
Alrighty.
You want to go into some local stuff now?
Yeah, let's go into some stuff that was happening around. These are some of the biggest stories that we had in the Richland Source, Knox Pages, or Ashland Source in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just start here at the top. One of the big stories that's actually still ongoing is the new YMCA sport complex. This is very exciting, obviously, for the community. It's going to be very beneficial. Be completed in 2025, so it's being built on about 35 acres. Not only is this going to be able to give the community a place for kids to play, for adults to work out, a new swimming pool, a walking track or a walking trail, and so much more, but it's also going to add more than 100 jobs to Richland County in construction phase, and 60 to 100 jobs when the actual facilities open. So yeah.
I think another significant part of it is it's going to be in the Belleville, Lexington area, which I drive through Belleville when I come here into Mansfield, because I live in Mount Vernon, and so you take 13 there, and just from reading the reaction of the story, what people were saying online, it just seems like that area of Richland County needed a YMCA or some sort of sports center in that area. So glad those folks in the area are getting that.
Honestly, I didn't even realize that it was going to be in the Lexington-Belleville area, which is really interesting. So do you think that they'll keep the Y here open? Is that the plan, do you know?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you think about Richland County and just how big it is compared to other counties like Ashland or Knox County and just like the population size and things like that. And so I think, you know, if there's investors involved, land available, and people there that are willing to support it, I think you can have both, and different communities will use it in different ways. Or, you know, I mean, the one in Mansfield will be used by Mansfield community and surrounding, and probably like Ontario and things like that. And yeah, and so I think when you look at it that way, it's just what the community has been wanting, and they had the backers for it. So
yeah, and definitely too, with how big travel sports are, they definitely think that the complex is going to be a really big travel destination, which is exciting because that means more hotels, restaurants, stores, gas stations, attractions, entertainment. So definitely bringing a lot more to the community than just a sports complex.
Yeah, I think the economic development ramifications are pretty important too, just giving people jobs in the construction field and kind of bolstering the economy of the Belleville, Lexington area, I think is super important too. So kind of get best of both worlds from the economic development side and the politicians or the council members who like to see that. And then you also get something for the community and kids to do, and especially when you're exercising. And yeah, it just has like a lot of good ramifications all around, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure. Well, another something else super big that is going to be affecting the community, but more Knox County, is Intel, right?
Yeah. When this was announced last year, I mean, it was huge. Every paper, every news outlet, I mean, everyone was talking about it. And I'm originally from Licking County, which is where this is being built. And so my parents are thinking about it a lot because they still live in Licking County. To put this in perspective, so Knox County has five villages. We got Centerburg, Fredericktown, Danville. We got Mount Vernon, that's the city. And, well, not five villages, we got five school districts. And then we got Howard, just surrounding that area, okay? And then we got Utica further south. But Centerburg, which is on the western portion of the county, it is closer to Columbus, and it's going to be 12 miles away from where Intel is being built. So for people that don't know what Intel is, it is a semiconductor chip maker. And so they make a lot of things that are in your phones, cars, computers, things like that. Okay, they run on chips. People remember back when the pandemic first started, supply chain issues, a lot of the chip manufacturers were being halted. And so that's kind of why car prices were going up and electronics and things, because we couldn't have the chips available to make a lot of our electronics. So this is kind of a way to bring it in-house in the United States. So in case if another pandemic happens, or, you know, we just don't have to rely on international supply with chips anymore. And so when this was announced, there was a lot of speculation on how much was given for Intel to be here. There was rumors that Intel was thinking, shopping around with some other places of where it could be. There's obviously an Intel spot in Arizona. And so we've been looking kind of at the similarities of that, what that might look like. So it's also based in California. So let me just read from the story here. So it's kind of been rambling. The company said it would invest $20 billion in the project, with the potential for up to 8 factories and $100 billion over the next decade. Now, some of that has kind of been squared away. We know a little bit more about the details of it. We actually had the groundbreaking last fall, which our other reporter, Knox Page's Grant Pepper, went to, and he covered that. And yeah, I mean, this is huge. It's going to give a lot of jobs, obviously, a lot of high-paying jobs. And it's going to take a while to construct as well. And so we're going to have a lot of construction jobs, a lot of supplying jobs, people bringing stuff over to the Intel factory. And so I don't really think we can put it into perspective yet because so much of it is unknown and we haven't really seen this in the area before. A lot of it is unknown of the impact of it, and Knox County is trying to prepare for it the best they can, just by giving economic development advice and increasing our housing, which is still ongoing. And I think Centerburg is going to be affected the most just because we have that one highway. Let me see if I can find the name of the highway. But I mean, they're 12 miles away from it. And so I think they're going to be greatly impacted by it.
I saw too in the article that like even like schools are going to probably have some like new programs and classes that kind of surround that.
Right. So like career centers, we have the Knox County Career Center, which if you want to kind of go into a trade in high school after high school, you can go into the career center your junior and senior year of school, of high school, and get a certificate in a trade. So it could be like welding, nursing, things like that. And so definitely they're going to be having some of that in the Knox County Career Center. I know that they're having talks about that, and then in the computer field and semiconductor field and things like that too. And you know, like these buildings are going to have great maintenance. And so one of the things that they're also having is HVAC, which is heating, ventilation, air conditioning. And so we got to have people that can put those HVAC units in to these buildings. And so, and that pays pretty well. And so, yeah, I mean, a lot of people think about the semiconductor space, but there's also different utilities and jobs that are going to have to be filled for this facility. So,
yeah, I mean, I think in the article it even says like around like an estimated 20,000 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely probably, I have to imagine that Mount Vernon is probably going to expand quite a bit, don't you think?
Yeah, and just to give other people some more, I guess, an idea of what we're talking about. So, I mean, it says here, Intel is planning to build its mini city in western Licking County on land that will eventually be annexed into New Albany. It won't be far away from Knox County. So like I said earlier, it's 12 miles south of Centerburg. And for Mount Vernon, it's 21 miles south of Mount Vernon. I mean, that's basically like a 30-minute drive for most people. And that's the average work commute for people in the U.S. is 30 minutes. And so Mount Vernon is, we just did a story too about the top, so either top 20 or top 25 jobs, like highest employed jobs in Knox County. A lot of those are, I mean, obviously the county is up there and Mount Vernon City Schools is up there and the city's up there, but you look at it and Kikozin is there, which is a manufacturing construction company. And then we got Aerial Corporation and FT Precision. So, I mean, Mount Vernon is especially a manufacturing construction town. We don't have a lot of, I mean, obviously we got like lawyers and things like that. But when you're looking at the tech space, that's not where Knox County is right now. And so when you got 30-minute drive, an hour drive all around for that, I mean, that opens the door for a whole new job sphere in the county.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I think we should move on to our last story.
Okay.
A national source here.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2022, blinking lights became required on the back of buggies. So I don't know. This to me was huge, especially because the amount of times I actually used to live off of 96, and the amount of times that I had to pass by accidents because in the dark, or even almost got into an accident myself because you can't see them. And people go so fast. I mean, especially on 96, and I know that's, you know, just one road out of the many, but it's definitely something that I think, I mean, even when there was a study found that 723 buggy crashes between 2009 and 2019. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, and when I lived in Ashland, I forget the U.S. route that you get onto 71, but right where that Bueller's and Walmart is, I mean, you'll see a lot of Amish riding that road, mm-hmm. and, I mean, you got semi-trucks and cars going fast and some cars going too fast, and, yeah, I mean, definitely there's been so many accidents, even in broad daylight, of buggies getting in crashes, and you got to worry about the horses. People love animals and horses and stuff, and those, and, you know, small kids will be in there and everything, and... Yeah, this has been going through the court systems with people not putting the lights on in Ashland. Ashland sources, Nathan Hart has also been reporting on that. So if you want to read the whole entire saga basically about it, you can look that up. But yeah, it is insane, crazy. Dylan Carr is another Ashland source reporting. He did an interview with someone who's Amish or might be former Amish about the buggy laws and why some Amish aren't complying with it, and that's a great interview too. But yeah, I mean, it is pretty crazy, and the it's right here. So it's called Old Order Amish Man Sheds Light on Sorchin Trooper Defiance to Ohio's New Buggy Law. So that's the Amish who aren't following the new laws. It's the Sorchin Troopers, and they see it as ungodly or new world, things like that, since they have like the lights and everything. But yeah, there's still some Amish who aren't complying with it, and I don't think they ever will. So I don't know, you just gotta find a way to compromise, I guess.
I know. Well, did you also see too that article, which was news to me, it states that there's going to be a 6 mile section on 545 in Ashland that's going to receive an 8-foot wide buggy lane,
mm-hmm.
just due to so many accidents, which I think is super interesting.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do. I mean, they're just like car crashes. You can't, inevitably, they're still going to happen. But
yeah.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see when they build those lanes mm-hmm. for the little buggies and see. And, you know, even it being 2023 now, so it's been when did they pass this? June, so it's been almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still don't see like anything, you know, like it's, I mean, and it's great, but also at the same time, it's like you think, not that it's common sense, but like if all of these are happening, why wouldn't you already have a warning light? Like, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
I get they have those little hazard things that they will, you know, show glares, like if headlights are on them, but sometimes uh-huh. it's just not enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see ODOT statistics. I don't know if they come from ODOT or from Ohio State Highway Patrol or just the agency that collects all that data, but if crashes, Amish-related crashes, went down since the law went into effect.
Hmm.
That'd be cool to see.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think we're wrapping up here. was there anything else you wanted to say about any of the stories or anything else?
No, I mean, just the fact that it's crazy that all of this has happened last year. I mean, we touched on barely anything, and it's amazing how much happened in 2022 and how much has already, I mean, happened, and all of like the progress and everything, and seeing how these stories have been developing just mm-hmm. since today. So
yeah, well, I'll say thank you for joining me and listening to this podcast episode. I think, yeah, we've been doing a 10-year anniversary, so that's cool. That Richland Source has been here for so long. I mean, and the Knox Pages and Ashland Source got picked up along the way and created. So all right, well, thank you for listening, Grant Ritchie, again, Katie Foster here as well, and we'll see you around.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Next, want to stay up to date on all local sports? Sign up for our sports newsletter today. Just click the link in our show notes to subscribe.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kurt Conrad. I've been the local sports reporter here at Richland Source since 2013 and have been covering high school sports in North Central Ohio since 1996. Subscribe to my weekly sports newsletter for the latest stories and insights from me and the rest of the Richland Source sports team, delivered directly to your email inbox each week. Check the link in the show notes to subscribe or go to richlandsource.com/sports.
Finally, we'd like to take a moment to remember the life of Jim Bemmler. Jim was born in Johnsville in 1937 and graduated from Fredericktown High School. He enjoyed serving as an officer in Future Farmers of America and working the family farm with his parents and siblings. He was a proud graduate of The Ohio State University and earned his BS in Agricultural Economics in 1959. He went on to earn a master's degree in Rural Sociology and Social Work. While in graduate school, he met and married the love of his life, Joan. Together, they built a strong and caring family. They were a loving team and enjoyed traveling, camping, supporting their children and grandchildren in their pursuits, and visiting with family and friends. Jim and Joan shared 52 wonderful years together until her passing in 2013. Jim forged a life dedicated to his family and community. He served as a case manager for Richland County Children's Services, focusing on foster care and adoptions until his retirement due to eyesight degeneration. He continued to serve children in Richland County when he directed the Big Brothers Big Sisters program for 15 years. He also served on the boards of the Mental Health Center, Big Brothers Big Sisters, and the Volunteers of America. He and Joan also helped establish the Mansfield Area Loss of Vision Support Group. Jim was a dedicated member of Lions International and enjoyed serving as president of both the Belleville and Bluffton clubs during his 33 years of service. He was awarded the Melvin Jones Fellowship, which embodies the humanitarian spirit of Lionism. He also established and enjoyed the Euchre Club at the Bluffton Senior Citizen Center. Jim loved working on his 1931 Model A Ford and was thankful for his friends at the Copas Hill Model A Club. He is survived by his loving children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and cousins. Thank you for taking a moment to celebrate and remember Jim's life and service to the Richland County community. You can submit an obituary for free on Richland Source. To learn more, click the link in our show notes or visit richlandsource.com/obituaries/submit. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow. Also, make sure to head over to richlandsource.com and click the Be a Member button to help support independent local journalism that informs and inspires. Every contribution goes to helping us make Richland County a better place and to help keep our journalism free. Also, if you like this podcast and want to hear more, make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.